Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Yahoo Sports presents The Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. Powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your host, Chris Mannix.
Hey everyone, this is Adrian Wojnarowski of The Vertical on Yahoo Sports. I'm here to invade The Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix's space to tell you about something we did on the site yesterday. Our first NBA trade deadline live video special, 90 minutes of breaking news, analysis, and guest appearances from the biggest newsmakers of the day, including Channing Frye and Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey. Over the course of this show, you'll hear from Chris Mannix and myself, Bobby Marks, our front office insider, former NBA player Brian Scalabrine, and our fantasy expert Andy Behrens. We're going to be doing these live shows all around the big news events in the NBA, including the draft, summer free agency, and more. So let's get it started.
Welcome in, everyone, to The Vertical and Yahoo Sports' first ever live NBA trade deadline show. For the next 90 minutes, we'll take you around the league and bring you up to speed on the latest trades, hear from GMs, coaches, and players live on the show, and, of course, the latest up-to-the-minute deals from The Vertical team. Joining me here on set is a man who spent 20 years in the Nets organization, the last five as an assistant GM, Bobby Marks. Also in studio is The Vertical's editor and NBA insider, Adrian Wojnarowski, and live from Salt Lake City, 11-year NBA veteran, Brian Scalabrine.
All right, you're good.
And guys, as the trade deadline officially comes to a close at 3 p.m. Eastern, just moments ago, here is our most up-to-date information. The latest deal, Markieff Morris, the small forward from the Phoenix Suns. He goes over to Washington. The Wizards send back Chris Humphries, DeJuan Blair, and a protected first-round pick. So the Wizards strengthen their team going to the playoff run. The Denver Nuggets, they ship DJ Augustine, Steve Novak, and they get those guys, ship Randy Foy to Oklahoma City in a deal that gets the Nuggets gets Oklahoma City a nice backup two guard. And Channing Frye, he's on the move, going from the Orlando Magic to the Cleveland Cavaliers in a three-team trade. Anderson Varejão, he moves to Portland with a first-round pick. Reportedly, Varejão will be bought out, though, at some point. Joel Anthony, he goes to the Houston Rockets in exchange for Marcus Thornton and Donatas Montiunas. The second trade the Rockets have made in the last few days. They upgrade their roster significantly over the last couple of days, so they make some nice moves there. And Tobias Harris, the other move they made earlier. Tobias Harris, he goes to the Detroit Pistons. Stan Van Gundy gets himself another big man. Brandon Jennings, Ersan Ilyasova, two role players with expiring contracts. They move to the Orlando Magic. But we're going to start with the moves that – we're going to get to the moves, I should say, that did happen. But I want to start with the move that didn't happen. Dwight Howard, the off-traveled center, is staying with the Houston Rockets. Woj, I want to start with you. The Rockets shopped Howard pretty hard last week. Why didn't a deal get done?
Chris, I just talked to sources in Houston. They do not have a trade for Dwight Howard. And they never got tremendous traction or really close to a deal. A big part of that is the fact that two things. Dwight Howard will be a rental for any team he goes to. He can opt out, become a free agent this summer. That's his plan. Teams did not want to give up their core assets to do that. One team that had interest in the last 24, 36 hours, the Milwaukee Bucks. But those talks went nowhere. You know, Charlotte coach Steve Clifford would have loved to have coached Dwight Howard again. He had him in Orlando, but the organization in Charlotte did not want to give up the significant amount of assets they would have had to Houston. So Houston's going to go forward for the rest of the season with Dwight Howard, and they're going to have to make a situation work in Houston between Dwight Howard and James Harden that is at minimally very tenuous.
Yeah, Woj, I'm not that surprised that Dwight Howard stayed put, because the perception of Dwight Howard around the league is a largely negative one. Teams still think he has talent, but his personality, his attitude, these things are all in question. And I think that really prohibited teams from making a lot of significant offers that might have been out there on the table for Dwight. So, yeah, he finished the season in Houston. We'll see what happens to him down the line. Bobby, I want to go to you on this. From an organizational standpoint, What were the dangers, what were the positives potentially in bringing in a Dwight Howard?
Well, Chris, there's multiple. Remember, he's still a top 10 center in the league, but he is a short-term rental, as Woj said. You're going to only have him for the next 30 games.
Bauer can't do
it. You have to remember, right, what is his price tag?
Let me try to get Daryl Morey.
How many assets are you willing to give up? The interesting question right now is, does Dwight Howard opt into that contract knowing that there is a limited market out there?
Could he actually do that, though? We went through this whole process before with the Orlando Magic, where Dwight eschewed that final year of his opted into the final year of his contract against really the advice of a lot of people. Do you think that actually happens with Dwight this time around?
Well, his cap number next year is $23 million. Remember, the cap is going up to a projected $90 million. It could happen. Unlikely, though, there will be a team out there that will pay Dwight Howard this summer.
Scal, I want to bring you into this conversation. The Boston Celtics, they were interested in Dwight Howard at the right price. But let me ask you this. What was the perception? What is the perception of Dwight Howard around the NBA?
Well, I mean, it's not good in the sense he had all those attitude problems in L.A. Then he goes to Houston. You know, he doesn't play in these back-to-back games. He's starting to play more now, but his injuries have been a big deal. And he's just not one of these guys that you would consider, like, this guy's a winner. We can rally around him. He's going to bring it every night. I mean, and that's what you want when you're paying, you know, a top 10 center in the league with that kind of money. You're going to want a guy that every night is there to deliver. And Dwight Howard, with his on-again, off-again playing, my back hurts, my back doesn't hurt. I think guys in general don't like the fact that they might have to play with a guy like Dwight Howard and a guy you can't count on.
Now, let me ask this, though, Scal, because I don't know that the numbers for Dwight Howard are reflective of what his numbers could be if he was with another team. Not to say that he's a great player anymore. This is not 08-09 Dwight Howard. He will never be that player ever again. But he is averaging, what, 8-9 shots per game with the Houston Rockets this year, 14-15 points per game with the Rockets this year. I got to believe that if he went to a different situation where he was playing with a different teammate other than James Harden, and I'm not blaming James Harden for this, but if he was in a different situation, we'd still see the 18, 19, 20 point per game score in Dwight Howard that we've seen. Do you still think he can be, say, the number two option on a team that hopes to win something?
Well, see, I never see Dwight Howard as how Dwight Howard sees himself. He thinks of himself as a back-to-the-basket guy who can score on the block. Now, you see it in spurts, but it doesn't impact winning as much. Where I see Dwight Howard is when he was with Stan Van Gundy, he's a high pick-and-roll player that rolls down the middle of the floor. You got shooting all around him. Everyone has to adapt to the shooting, and then he posts up right in front of the rim. Dwight doesn't want to do that, the work that it takes right now to play that way. He wants you to dribble the ball down and throw it to him on the block. And everyone that watches Dwight Howard over the course of a game, he might have two or three moves where you're like, okay, I can see how you can do that. But over the course of 20 possessions, 25 possessions, he's not a guy that you can count on going to day in and day out each possession throughout a 48-minute game. The problem is Dwight Howard sees himself like that. So he wants the ball, and he always complains about touches. But when you give him the ball and force feed him, that scenario, he hasn't produced, and it doesn't actually help you win games.
Woj, we know that there was no divorce right now between Dwight Howard and the Rockets, but is a divorce inevitably coming for player and team?
Well, what the Rockets are telling me right now is, listen, they still think their best chance of winning, getting into the playoffs and competing this year is with Dwight Howard, but they've got to figure out a way to make this work with James Harden because that relationship is broken. But I'll say this, and I disagree with Scal a little bit on this. I think Dwight Howard has played extremely well for this team in the postseason the last 2 years. He helped them get to a conference final last year. And part of the games he sat out was similar to what San Antonio, other teams do with veteran players. Dwight Howard's been in the league since he was a teenager. There's a lot of mileage on his knees. They've tried to protect him the way other teams do with veteran players. I think Dwight's a player who has played in pain. Clearly, offensively, he has never evolved in a way that I think people wanted him to, but he's still a player that can impact winning. And I think there's blame to go around in Houston on more than just Dwight Howard on why this team has underachieved.
Bobby, let me ask you this. Put your general manager hat back on. You're a team with cap space, max level cap space. Do you go out there and make that type of offer to Dwight Howard?
I wouldn't, and it's going to bite you on the back end. For the first year, maybe $22, $23 million. But you got to remember, Howard, from a durability standpoint, back-to-backs, limited minutes going forward, do you want to be paying that player when he's 33, 34, 35? you know, $25, $26 million. Even with the cap as it's going up that high, I wouldn't want to take that chance.
All right, let's talk about a team that did make a deal earlier today, and that's the Detroit Pistons. They acquire Tobias Harris. They make some moves earlier. Marcus Thornton, you see, Donatas Montiunas, both guys headed to Detroit for a reasonably low price, and Joel Anthony, a 2016 first-round pick. Bobby, let's start with you here. What do you think of this particular deal? Montiunas, when he's healthy, gives them pretty good value.
Well, that's the question. When he is healthy, he's missed, you know, he's only played in 8 games this year. He's missed, you know, 3/4 of the season so far. When he is healthy, he gives the Pistons a different element. The pick is another story. It's protected 1-8. So if Detroit, you know, makes the playoffs, it's going to Houston. If they fall out, it most likely will still go. So there's a lot of more to this story to come out. We got to see if he is healthy.
Look, I love these deals for the Detroit Pistons because what does it give them? Perimeter shooting bigs. And what is Stan Van Gundy like? Perimeter shooting bigs. Spent his entire career in Orlando surrounding Dwight Howard with perimeter shooters. Now he's got a guy in Tobias Harris having somewhat of a down year after the re-signing in the offseason. And Montiunas, who I thought was going to be maybe the most improved player at the start of this season. Injuries have derailed him a little bit, but there is lottery potential in that player. I think it's a risk, but I think it's a pretty good risk for Stan Van Gundy to take on a team that's not had much luck in recent years in free agency. Scal, I want to throw it to you, specifically when it comes to Tobias Harris. You've seen him a couple of times play this year. What do you think of how he fits in with what Detroit wants to do?
I think he fits in absolutely perfect. You think he'll start at the 3, in my opinion, and then Stan Van Gundy will play him at the 4. So once again, stretching the floor out, allowing that 1-4 pick and roll, 1-5 pick and roll between Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond, which they run high volume of it down the stretch. If you come in and collapse on Drummond, because you have to, because you can throw the ball up to the rim, Tobias Harris is going to be standing wide open in the corner to knock down open shots. He struggled getting open shots in Orlando because Oladipo is not really a pass-first guy. And I know Reggie Jackson isn't that way either, but Stan Van Gundy is the type of guy that says, listen, if they shut down the lane, which you're going to have to, perimeter shots are going to be wide open. And telling you guys, do not sleep on Marcus Thornton in this trade. He's a throw-in. I get it, but I think I covered him last year. He can win you a playoff game. If they can somehow get to the playoffs and maybe get off of the A seed, get to the 7th seed, Marcus Thornton could be one of these J.R. Smith type of guys where he has 7 threes in a game and he makes a big impact.
Bobby, quickly, what does this do for Detroit's cap space? Because they're taking on some real salaries in this deal.
Well, what I love, they got their shopping done now. They are not going to be lumped in this summer with the rest of the 20 teams with, you know, $25 million in cap space. You've got Harris under contract for the long term. Montiunas, as he is a free agent. He is restricted, though, so Detroit will have every option to bring him back. So you've got 2 nice pieces under contract. You do not have to go out and overpay. And just jumping with what Scal just said about Marcus Thornton, I had Marcus in Brooklyn. He basically won us Game 7 up in Toronto. So he is a sharpshooter. He is a specialist, and he can win them a playoff game come April.
Yeah, you can read more about this deal on the Vertical website. Broke most of these stories all day long on Yahoo Sports. All right, we're going to take our first time out here. Still to come, we'll break down more of today's deals and hear from others involved with today's trade deadline. Plus, we'll check in with Andy Behrens, who has some updates on some big-name fantasy stars. Stay with us. Welcome back to the NBA Trade Deadline Special here on The Vertical and Yahoo Sports. It was a busy last few hours. Let's take a look at some of the moves that we reported earlier today on Yahoo Sports and The Vertical. Markieff Morris, he's headed to Washington. Phoenix Suns trade him in exchange for Chris Humphries, DeJuan Blair, and probably the most valuable asset, that first-round pick that is protected. DJ Augustine, he's on the move. Denver Nuggets get Augustine, Steve Novak, and 2 second-round picks from Oklahoma City. Randy Foy headed to the Thunder. And Channing Frye, he's the centerpiece of a 3-team deal. He's going to the Cleveland Cavaliers from Orlando. Jared Cunningham, he's on his way to the Magic. Anderson Varejao, a first-round draft pick, go to the Portland Trail Blazers. The Blazers, according to the Vertical's agent Wojnarowski, likely to buy out the Anderson Varejao contract. And the Detroit Pistons, active today. They get Marcus Thornton, Donatas Montiunas, the Rockets, Joel Anthony, and a 2016 first-round pick. Well, I'll tell you what. We're looking at Markieff Morris. What is he? Woj, what do you look at? What Markieff Morris brings to the Houston Rockets? What do you see with Markieff Morris going there?
Chris, listen. Morris for the Wizards is a player. This has been an up and down Washington team. He gives them certainly athleticism in the front court, scoring. You know, he's from Philadelphia. He's from the East. This brings him certainly closer to his roots. But Washington needed a spark, and this is a team that had big aspirations to, you know, of getting into the postseason and really going this year, really advancing. And for them, and I think what was appealing to a lot of teams about Markieff Morris, despite the issues with attitude, the legal problems he is facing, which really a lot of teams backed away from because of that, he is on a really cap-friendly contract. $8 million a year. He's got 3 years left on that contract that he signed in Phoenix. So there's some risk-reward to Washington doing this, but the Wizards felt very strongly they had to come back from All-Star break having improved themselves. And listen, Morris is a talent. Now they've got to find a way to get him incorporated into their group.
Scal, let's take it to you. The Washington Wizards need to do something to get this team into the postseason if they're going to have any hope of luring Kevin Durant in the offseason. Does Markieff Morris make them a better team?
Oh, definitely. And I think it solidifies what they're trying to do. They get Humphreys out of there, who really wasn't a three-point shooter. Same thing with Blair. Now you add Morris, who can play the four and shoot the three. And they're playing their best when Dudley's on the floor, knocking down shots. Now, Markieff Morris is basically an addition to Dudley. You can play them together, but all they want to do is open the floor up for Brad Beal, John Wall, and play that up-and-down style. So I like the move. I think it will actually work out, and I agree with Woj. Cap-friendly contract, $8 million a year is like a mid-level exception now.
Yeah, Bobby, what does this deal do to the Wizards' cap space? Because they do want to pursue Kevin Durant this offseason one way or the other.
Well, they can. And it gives them $25 million in room still. They'll still be able to sign Bradley Beal. He's got a nice cap hold on there. But if they want to go out and get a player like Kevin Durant or a Nicholas Batum, a player like that, they can go out and do that. The pick that goes out, I'm fine with it. What I like is that Morris is going to be under contract for the next 3 or 4 years. And when that pick comes to fruition in Phoenix, he'll still be there.
Yeah, I like this deal for Washington because I think Markieff Morris can deliver at least what Marcus Morris delivered to the Detroit Pistons. He was separated from his brother. He didn't like it at the time, but he got there. He's played reasonably well for the Pistons. Stan Van Gundy has gushed to me about his work ethic and how he's come to work every single day as a professional. I think Markieff, playing multiple positions, you can play him 3, 4, 5 sometimes in a small lineup. That's what the Wizards want to do. They want to play small. And with Markieff Morris out there, I think you can do that. I think he really gives them an upgrade and probably gives them just enough of a boost with the right mix of players to get them into the postseason. So I like that deal for the Washington Wizards. Woj, I want to ask you about the Atlanta Hawks and the team that we've been talking about really for the last 48 hours. What are they going to do? What they do will dictate what a lot of other teams are able out there to do. They didn't trade Jeff Teague. They didn't trade Al Horford. What do you make of what the Hawks didn't do at the trade deadline?
Chris, Atlanta really felt the market out on their key players, Al Horford, Jeff Teague particularly. Two things. Number one, with Al Horford, he's going to be a free agent this summer. And what he has not given any indication to the Hawks on, and what he really has no interest in dealing with right now during the season, sources tell me, is what his future is. So the Hawks went through the trade deadline unsure of whether of how significant of a chance they have of re-signing Horford this summer as a free agent. And that impacted what teams were going to offer them. For example, Boston has great interest in Al Horford. They have the salary cap space to sign him this summer. And so Boston was hesitant, sources tell me, to offer a big package to a player in Horford that they could sign outright this summer. So they didn't get those kind of offers in Atlanta to feel like they were ready to blow this team up. And then Jeff Teague, another player they talked to teams about, but really midway through today, sources tell me, Atlanta had backed away from trade talks with Teague. And listen, you're seeing a lot of teams feeling like we have cap space going into the summer. We have an ability to approve our teams in free agency or absorbing contracts in July. We aren't giving up big assets at the trade deadline.
I tell you what, I understand not giving up a lot for a particular player on an expiring contract. But for me, the Boston Celtics might have missed an opportunity here. I don't know what the demands were from the Hawks for Al Horford from Boston, what they wanted, how many picks they wanted. But I look at the Celtics roster, and Al Horford would have been an ideal fit. He's a good guy. He's an elite power forward. He can score, play multiple positions. I think he would have been terrific. And all of a sudden, he would have given Boston that front court consistent low post threat that I think they've been lacking for most of the season. Suddenly you have Al Horford, you've got Isaiah Thomas, you've got Marcus Smart, you've got Jay Crowder, you've got a solid bench and an elite head coach in Brad Stevens. Man, I wonder about that deal. Scal, you're around the Celtics a lot. Do you think it was an opportunity missed not getting Al Horford?
100%. Now, obviously, I don't know the ins and outs of what was offered and what wasn't, the Brooklyn pick. But Al Horford, to me, is a stud. He's a perfect fit for Brad Stevens. You got him now shooting three-pointers, and he's shooting at a pretty decent clip. So he's a perfect fit for Brad Stevens' offense. He could play the four. He could play the five. You know, I think they missed out. I don't know what Atlanta asked for, so I can't really jump the gun on that one. But I guess I don't think Al Horford's going to end up in Boston as a free agent. I think there'll be too many other opportunities out there for him. And I think he'll choose to go to L.A. or Miami versus going to Boston. So I agree with you on that, Chris. And as far as Atlanta, to me, it's all about Jeff Teague. If Jeff Teague is playing well, and I don't know if it's because he's hurt this year, if he can't get over that injury bug, but if Jeff Teague plays well, I think their whole team goes. It's a lot more than missing Damari Carroll. I think Jeff Teague is a fraction of what he was last year. So I don't know that they were trying to move him for that reason. But I do know this. When Jeff Teague is at his best, Atlanta is very tough to stop on the offensive end.
Yeah, I got
to
tell you, Scal, I agree with you, too. I mean, that fifth year, Bobby, for Al Horford and the Celtics having him, that would be so enticing for a player about to enter his 30s. Not the back end of his career, but certainly might be looking for a long-term deal. Do you think that was an opportunity missed for the Celtics?
Well, I'm a gambler, and I would have pushed my chips to the middle there with Boston and Horford, because what will happen is that you can sell Horford the last 30 games. You put him in a Celtic uniform. You let him experience the playoffs in Boston. And that's your free agent pitch right there. Instead of sitting at a table on July 1 for 3 hours and try to put a pitch on why he should come and play for you, I would have taken the chance, even if it would have cost the Brooklyn pick. I get it. It's a top four pick. But if you can have an Al Horford and have a chance to go for it right now, you do it.
So you would have given up the Brooklyn pick, a top five pick for Al Horford?
I would have. This year, I would have done it. I would not have touched the Brooklyn pick in 2018. I wouldn't have done anything with the swap or the Memphis pick, but I would have done that pick right now.
Gutsy, because that Brooklyn pick is very enticing, I think, to the people of Boston and that organization. Well, we like to break news here in the show. And Woj, what do you got for us?
Chris, leaked sources tell me that the Detroit Pistons have traded Joel Anthony to the Philadelphia 76ers. Detroit will send a future second-round pick to the Sixers to take on Anthony's contract. So now Detroit gets that salary off. And again, Philadelphia is in that acquisition mode. And this allows them to free up some money and space for the players they brought into the Pistons here at the deadline.
Wait, you're trying to tell me that that Philadelphia likes second round picks? Is that no way?
They've got sure? it from here all the way down the coast. They do.
Hey, Bobby, let me ask you this about bringing when you have a guy like Joel Anthony, probably on the back end of his career, not going to contribute much on the floor, but he is a veteran presence, and they just brought in Elton Brand. What can a guy like Joel Anthony do for a team that has a plethora of young bigs that they're trying to groom?
Well, let's see if he even gets to Philly. You know, he is a prime candidate that could be bought out by March 1st. He is a veteran. He's a big. He's been limited this year, but he is one of those guys. But he is a veteran, and I'm sure, Sam and Jerry Colangelo down there are going to convince him to kind of bring him, wrap his arms around him, and have him in that locker room.
Is it the right thing to do to buy out a guy like that? Because he can be a positive influence, championship experience with the Miami Heat.
Well, you have to remember, with buyouts, you better make sure you have a team on the back end to leave any money on the table. And if it's going to be a straight waiver cut or a buyout, you know, that's something that they're going to have to figure out in the next week.
Mm-hmm. All right, quick update. Want to let you know that Channing Frye, just traded to Cleveland, will be joining us live right here on the show in 10 minutes. So please stick around for that. But first, let's switch gears, take a look into some fantasy basketball. Andy Behrens checks in with a pair of big names that could be returning from injury to help fantasy owners.
Fantasy owners have a dilemma with both Blake Griffin and Chris Bosh. We need to talk about these two injury situations as we head into the second half of the season. And we have to start with the Blake Griffin situation. Still no timeline on him returning from that broken hand. It's his shooting hand, so he's not able to put in the requisite amount of work right now. This is a dicey situation going forward. Blake is still owned in 93% of Yahoo Fantasy Leagues. That's probably too much. You have to expect him to miss at least a month, maybe come back late March. right in the most important weeks of the fantasy season. So if you're a head-to-head owner, that's okay. You still get them in the big weeks. But if you're a rotisserie owner, you have to use that empty roster spot. I think he's a cut in most fantasy formats. Another story that's come up lately, Chris Bosh. He misses the All-Star game with a calf issue. It turns out he's back on blood thinners. While he's on the medication, he's not going to be playing for Miami. This is a potential season ending situation. If that happens, it's obviously, for fantasy purposes, it's Justice Winslow, it's Amari Stoudemire who get the bump. They're going to see plenty of double-doubles down the stretch. Really, though, you hope the best for Chris Bosh.
Bobby, quickly, some breaking news. Lance Stephenson, he's been traded from the Los Angeles Clippers, reportedly for Jeff Green. A first-round pick as a sweetener thrown in by the Clippers. Seems like a hefty price to pay for a guy like Jeff Green.
Well, it's a rental, again. You know, 30 games. With the Clippers, they have a pick going out to Toronto in 2017. It looks like it's a 2019 pick. You can't trade picks in consecutive years. They'll get Green, a bench player, put him on the floor. You can do it right now with Blake recovering. It's a gutsy move for the Clippers. For Memphis, it's a roll of the dice. Remember, their pick goes to Denver in the 6 to 14 range. So if they've stubbed their toe over the next 30 games, that pick is going to the Nuggets.
Scal, you got a good look at Jeff Green during his days with the Celtics. Inconsistency has kind of been his hallmark throughout the course of his career. What can he bring to the Clippers?
Well, I think Doc Rivers knows exactly what Jeff Green is. He's not what everyone wanted him to be at one time, a superstar of this league. But listen, he can run the floor, and he can make open shots. He can drive closeouts. He will get those open looks with Chris Paul and the offense that they run. Doc's familiar with him. So I think if Doc was okay with making this move, then he knows exactly how he's going to use him in L.A.
Bobby, Lance Stephenson, there was a time when he was really highly regarded. Last year at Indiana, even despite the blowing in LeBron's ear and that nonsense, this guy was regarded as maybe not an elite two guard, but on the cusp right below it, that tier right below it. He goes to Charlotte, signed what I thought was a ridiculous contract, and turns out to be a smart one for the team that signed him to it. What's happened with Lance Stephenson, and do you see any team out there willing to commit multiple years, guaranteed money to him in his next deal?
Well, you better do your homework if you're going to make that commitment to him in the offseason, or if he even makes it to Memphis. You know, could he be another one of those guys, you know, a possible, you know, possible buyout? You know, they'll have they can evaluate him for the next 30 days. They've got a team option, you know, at the end of June, and they can cut bait with him. But his fall is remarkable right now. You know, where he was in Indiana to Charlotte to the Clippers, and now getting traded again. But he's still young. There will be a team out there this summer. There always is, to take a chance on him.
I think there will be a team that takes a chance on him, but it'll be a flyer. It'll be a one-year contract. He's not going to get anywhere near the type of guaranteed money I think he probably would have been hoping at this point of his career. There has to be just a type of team that he has to play on. Whatever Indiana played like, through bigs, with Paul George, with a more patient, deliberate offense where he could play off of pick and rolls and off of post players. But it's almost like a quarterback, like RG3 or Colin Kaepernick. You've got quarterbacks that can only play in a specific type of system. Lance Stephenson, to me, strikes me now as a guy that can only play in a specific type of system. Scal, let me ask you, if you were running a team or the coach of a team, would you go out and try to sign Lance Stephenson to a team-friendly type of contract?
No, and I'll tell you the reason why. We go back to the Indiana to now. The game has evolved. Shooting is becoming much more of a premium. Lance Stephen, not a great three-point shooter at all. I mean, at sometimes earlier this season and even last season, he was under 20%. So you want guys that knock down shots. Go out there and you can find a lot of players without the baggage that can make open shots. But Lance Stephenson, he can dribble. He can make big plays. Maybe, yes. He can defend a guy once in a while, but at the end of the day, shooting is the all-time premium right now, and the game is changing, and Lance Stephenson is being sent behind.
All right, we're going to take a break, but stick with us. When we come back, we'll chat with the newest member of the Cleveland Cavaliers, Channing Frye. Stick around. Welcome back to the NBA Trade Deadline Special. A flurry of deals have happened in the last few hours, and one of the more significant ones involved Channing Frye, the Orlando Magic forward, now a Cleveland Cavaliers forward. And Channing joins us here on the Yahoo Trade Deadline Special. Channing, I know you've been hearing trade rumors around your name for the last two or three days. How's it feel to finally get all this settled?
You know what? I actually was hearing trade rumors the first 2 weeks of the season. So, you know, being in the league for 10 years, man, you know, I kept telling everybody, you know, nothing happens until you get that phone call or you get that meeting in the room. And so, you know, right now, of course, I have a flurry of feelings, but I'm excited to get to Cleveland and try to help out as much as I can and just sit down and talk and be able to play with those that level of players.
Jenny, you weren't getting the consistent playing time in Orlando. Was that more about the Magic wanting to play some of that young talent than it was perhaps what you have left?
You know what? I can't really say that. I had a great relationship with Coach Skiles, and I think we were just trying to figure out lineups that win. You know, and sometimes, you know, when I was starting lineup, we were winning, I don't know, 20 out of 25 or something like that, and then we lost like 15 out of 16. So, you know, there was a lot of inconsistency there from everybody. So he's just trying to do a job and help give the team as much chance to win. So, you know, just a situation where, you know, things just didn't work out, man. Nobody took it personal. I, like I said, I have a great relationship with the guys on the team. I'm going to miss them. I've seen them grow a lot in these 2 years and wish them the best.
At Channing, it's Bobby Marks. Let's talk about your range of emotions off the court. You know, we thought you were going to the Clippers. Now you're heading to Cleveland, and just the transition of getting up to Cleveland, and just what's going through your mind right now.
To be honest, I mean, how can I be mad? Really, you know, the only thing I'm kind of upset about is like, you know, I'm outside right now and it's 72 degrees and sunny. So I'm like packing all these jackets up. So, you know, in all honesty, I just want to go, you know, and win. I want to help a team win, and I want to go to the playoffs. You know, I had those expectations when I came to Orlando, and it just didn't come true. And so, you know, business part of the game happens. And so I just got to be prepared and give myself the best chance to help this team to win some extra games.
Channing, have you thought at all at this point about how you fit with the Cavaliers?
You know what? I always think about every team about how I could fit in, and I think right now what I do is what I was, you know, what I think I've been doing over the last few years is just giving guys space that they need to create and take it to the rack. And so, I think for me, you have guys like, you know, Mozgov, you have Tristan Thompson, you have LeBron, you have, you know, Kevin Love, you have all these guys that want to get to the rack, that want to score in the paint, you know, including LeBron. And so what I do is just space the floor and create opportunities for them in that situation. And then on screen and rolls, you have guys like Kyrie, J.R. Smith, Villadova. And so, you know, for right now, I'm just going to kind of go with that. And then, you know, on the defensive end, like I said, I'm not out there blocking shots like Whiteside. But I think, you know, my defense is a little underrated. And I think, you know, on this team, I'm just going to continue to try to strive and do the best I can.
Channing, you had one deep run in the playoffs, you know, with the Phoenix Suns back in 2010, but only been to the postseason twice in your career. Is there a sense of kind of invigoration going to a team that's not only going to make the playoffs, but is going to be expected to compete for a championship?
Well, I think, you know, even though I didn't make the playoffs only but three times, I think two of those teams, you know, we won 48 games, and I think another team, we won 41 and lost both times by, you know, one time not going into the playoffs. So I think I've been on teams that have tried to play for something other than the regular season, and it just makes it that much more fun. You're a lot more focused. You're a lot more team-oriented, and things mean much more. Each game, regardless of what the score is, you're playing for the next week. You're playing to get into rhythm. And you know, me coming here, it's going to be a different experience. I've never been traded halfway through the season or more than halfway through the season. And so I'm just going to try to fit my way in and make sure these guys know that I'm here, you know, not to mess around or to ride anybody's coattails, but to help them win. And, you know, everybody's going to get an opportunity, you know, in certain chances, and I just have to take advantage of mine when it comes.
Tyronn Lue has talked about playing more up-tempo since he took over for David Blatt. The possessions in Cleveland are actually up in his short time as the head coach. Does that more up-tempo style, does that fit in to what you think you bring to a team?
Oh, without a doubt. I think you look at, you know, even when we played him, I thought they played a little slow. You know, with LeBron coming at you full speed, Kyrie Irving coming at you full speed, it's almost impossible to stop those guys in those kind of situations. But then with guys like Tristan and going to the rack and Kevin Love and J.R. Smith, you know, spreading the floor, it's almost impossible to guard them like that. You know, sometimes you can kind of lure them into taking a bad two or something if you get them in a half court. But now that they're up and running, I watched them the other day, and it's the pace of the game right now is really good for them. And I think, you know, when I come, we'll see how it is. And, you know, for me, it's extremely well, you know, especially trailing the floor. You know, is that big guy going to stop LeBron or Kyrie, or is he going to, you know, take away the three of me trailing?
I mean, nobody can play as fast as those Phoenix teams, right?
No. You know what? I think the league is, well, I think one team is playing that fast, but I think they're just a team of guards. But, you know, I think for me, Each team has to have their own identity. And so, I'm going to try to fit into the identity that the Cavs already have and have been have for a bunch of years. And, I'm just coming in and trying to help out and take advantage of the situations that I'll be given.
Well, Channing, we appreciate you giving us a couple of minutes. We know it's a busy day for you. Best of luck in Cleveland, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, Channing Frye, the newest member of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's bring in Brian Scalabrine. Scal, Channing seems pretty excited about the way he fits into this Cavaliers team. What do you think about the way a player like him fits onto that roster?
I mean, it's a perfect fit. You think about Cavs are always going to be looking for more shooting. They're not interested in this regular season. All they have to do is figure out how are they going to beat the Warriors or how are they going to beat the Spurs. And the way you do that is by having shooting on the floor. It's the reason why LeBron went out and traded Wiggins to get Kevin Love. Now you have Channing Frye. Tristan Thompson more solidifies himself as the five, gives them a little flexibility if they want to lose Mozgov next year. For this team, they have so much more lineup flexibility with Channing Frye out there because they have two bigs that can stretch the floor, defend, and rebound their position. I love the move for the Cavs. I think it's for them to take that next step. I still don't think they're better than the Warriors. I still think the Warriors would beat them, but it really does gets them to that next level where the Warriors have to make some decisions when the floor is going to be spread and LeBron and Kyrie are driving down the lane.
Well, from everything that I heard in the day leading up to the trade deadline, the Cavaliers were kind of scouring for that more defensive-minded forward. Frye's a terrific shooter, not exactly that defensive guy that maybe some other people might have been on the market. Did Cleveland get the player that they were looking for?
They really did, Chris. They were aggressive in the last few days. They were very concerned with the Clippers' ability to go in and get Frye from Orlando. But the Clippers kept holding out for that Jeff Green deal with Memphis. They finally made it. Had to give up a first-round pick. They've given up a lot of picks with the Clippers. But they get, obviously, Lance Stephenson's deal off. And Jeff Green's a player that Doc Rivers had in Boston. He's very familiar with. But for Cleveland, listen, they were very aggressive. Because in order to bring Frye in and his salary, they had to get Anderson Varejao off. They had to give a second-round pick to Portland to get Varejao out to bring in Frye. And they were very concerned over the last 48 hours that they were in line behind the Clippers. But they wanted shooting. And listen, remember that Phoenix team? When Phoenix lost Channing Frye in free agency to Orlando, you talked to their coaching staff. When they fell off last year, the biggest thing they pointed to was the loss of Channing Frye and his ability to spread the floor and make defenders have to go out and cover him. Even when he's not making shots, you have to find him on the floor. That's a great premium in the NBA. I think Channing Frye has a chance to make a huge impact for this Cavaliers team.
Bobby, Orlando moved Tobias Harris earlier in the week. They got two expiring contracts back. Now you see the move Channing Frye. What do you think the mindset is of Orlando with these recent deals?
Well, basically what they did was they flopped Frye for Ilyasova, created a bunch of cap space this summer. They could have about $42 million in room. They're going to put Aaron Gordon at the three. They're going to try Mario Hezonja at the three. They're going to try Evan Fournier at the three. So they are getting younger. They added Brandon Jennings, a point guard that they desperately needed with C.J. Watson being out most of this year. They're still in the playoff race, but with the teams in front of them getting a lot better, it's going to be tough down the stretch.
Yeah, to me, this seems like a do-over for the Orlando Magic. They signed Tobias Harris back in the offseason. They made a run at Paul Millsap, didn't get him. I think they had a little buyer's remorse when they got Harris and saw maybe he didn't quite fit in to what they were trying to do under Scott Skiles. Now they do free up some room for Aaron Gordon to get some more minutes at a power forward spot. Any minutes you can free up for Mario Hezonja, I say take. Mario Hezonja is a terrific young talent. Giving him more time on the floor because he's not your prototypical European player, is he? He's a guy that not only can shoot the three, but he goes to the basket in the same way kind of that Manu Ginobili went to the basket. He goes to the basket trying to assault the rim, not trying to throw up floaters around it.
Well, he's got a maturity about him. And I think, as I agree with you, you put him on the floor for what more minutes than what he's already played, the first half of the year, good things happen. And with Orlando, it's going to be interesting this summer. You know, they're now, even with cap space, a thin free agent market. they're going to be in the overpay business. So it's kind of a wait and see. Hard to give a grade right now, but you know, we'll wait and see how this trade goes.
Yeah, they went after one member of the Atlanta Hawks organization last year in Paul Millsap. I get a feeling they're going to make a run at another one in Al Horford perhaps this summer to try to get that other marquee player to play with some of their young talents. All right, we're going to take another timeout. Still to come, we'll break down a couple more of these trades and also assess the fantasy impact. You're watching the NBA Trade Deadline Special on The Vertical and Yahoo Sports. Welcome back to the NBA Trade Deadline Show here on The Vertical and Yahoo Sports. A lot of last-minute moves took place right before the deadline. Here's a look at a couple that we broke here at The Vertical. Markieff Morris, he is headed to Washington. The Wizards send back Chris Humphries, DeJuan Blair, and a first-round pick. One would imagine that first-round pick is exactly what the Phoenix Suns were after in that particular deal. Channing Frye, he's on the move, headed to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Jared Cunningham, he goes to Orlando. Anderson Varejão, as Adrian Wojnarowski reported, likely be bought out by the Portland Trail Blazers. They also get a first-round pick. DJ Augustine, Steve Novak, they're headed to the Denver Nuggets in a deal that sends Randy Foy, a two-guard that was coveted by a lot of teams around the NBA, also broke this story at the Vertical website. And recently, Jeff Green, going from Memphis. Jeff Green on the move again, the nomadic forward now. Lance Stephenson, he goes to the Memphis Grizzlies, and what could be Lance Stephenson's potential last hurrah in the NBA? Bring our panel back in. Bobby Marks, Adrian Wojnarowski. Guys, busy last couple of hours. But why don't we talk about the Houston Rockets, the team that didn't do anything. We're kind of waiting, sitting back, wondering if the Rockets are going to move. Woj, how surprised are you, I guess, that Dwight Howard is still a Rocket after the trade deadline?
It wasn't from a lack of effort, Chris. Houston really tried to move him. The market is just very limited for him. His salary, his age, the injuries, and the fact that he's going to be a free agent this summer, it gets back to the fact that teams do not want to give up significant assets for a player that if they want, they can go out and sign in free agency.
Do you think that the Rockets are done with Dwight Howard? Do you think there'll be a realistic effort to keep him? Because I don't know what it's like between Harden and Howard personally, but professionally on the floor, they just don't seem like the right mix.
Chris, personally, professionally, those two are not coexisting right now, sources tell me. And unless there is a detente between Dwight Howard and James Harden over the last stretch, 2 months of the season, they can't bring those two back together. And that's going to be something they're going to have to work through. It may be past the point of no return. And Houston's got to figure out, is there a sign and trade possible this summer? But the one thing about the Rockets front office, they don't want to bring back bad contracts. They weren't going to take back long-term money. They'll take their chances of going back into free agency, still having James Harden to sell and build around.
Scott, let me ask you. We asked you about Al Horford and where he'd fit with some teams. He'd fit with a lot of different teams because he's a good player and a good guy, respected across the league. What about Dwight Howard? How many teams out there can you see Dwight Howard realistically helping in his next deal?
I don't think, if you look forward, and let's say he goes to a team and he signs for 4 more years. I mean, I just can't see Dwight Howard being a guy you want either A, playing for you when he's 30-some-odd years old and run down, or B, sitting on the bench injured, ruining the culture of your team down the stretch. So I can see why people don't want to get Dwight Howard, don't want to give up significant assets. If you get him and now he opts out, are you sort of married to signing him for 5 years at the age where he's at right now? I just don't see why a team would want to take that risk. Now, if you could tell me Dwight Howard will take a 2-year deal or he'll sign for a 1-year deal, but he's not going to do that. He's going to opt out and he's going to try to get the most money he can, and he's putting Houston in an awkward position moving forward. If he opts out and he asks for 5 years, what do the Rockets do?
I might be alone on an island here, honestly. Probably am. But I like Dwight Howard. I think Dwight Howard can still win a championship right now at this point of his career. Can he be the alpha male on a championship team? No. But could he be the second option on a really good team has championship? For 3-4 years. Look, the back's not really a problem anymore. The knee hasn't been a problem in, about a year? I think health-wise, he's okay, Scal. I just think people are more worried about his personality, about maybe his aloofness than they are actually his health.
Woj, I will say this. You know, the one thing that every coach would tell you is they do not want to coach the aging superstar who still thinks that he's 25 years old. And to me, Dwight Howard seems to be right up that alley where maturity-wise, he still sees himself as 2009 Dwight Howard, and he's not going to be able to move on from that. So I think that's a huge problem in the locker room. He doesn't get – now, I get it. I get it. James Harden, he's a little bit nuts in the stuff that he does. But James Harden is an elite player in this league, and everyone would say he's an elite player. So now Dwight Howard had a problem with Stan Van Gundy, who we know is a good coach, Kobe Bryant, who's one of the greatest of all time, and we have – and now he has a problem with James Harden, who was second in MVP voting. And so where does this stop with? Why don't we start looking at Dwight Howard? Why don't we always look at the other guys around him?
Scal, that's cold, man. The guy just turned 30. You're calling him old. He just
turned
30.
I know, but he's been in the league for – he got a lot of miles, Woj. That's a lot of miles.
Woj, what do you think?
Listen, Steve Clifford in Charlotte worked with Dwight Howard in Orlando. He was on Stan Van Gundy's staff. Now, Charlotte decided that they were not going to give up, draft picks, young players, you know, a Frank Kaminsky, a Jeremy Lamb, who they re-signed. They weren't going to gut their roster to go after Dwight. But Steve Clifford would have been happy and more than willing to coach him and felt like they got a tremendous amount out of him in Orlando and that he's still a player that you can build around with. Listen, the league has changed, and you need shooters all around him. There's no question. But I think in the right situation, what's going to be interesting for Dwight is, where is he economically in this league? He'd still like to be a max contract player. And listen, Bobby, I think Dwight might be able to get that kind of money on a one-year deal, maybe a two-year deal. But the idea of a four-year max deal at his age with the injuries, I don't think that's realistic.
I personally wouldn't do it, you know. And that's what we talked about earlier. Does he opt into that big number? It's, you know, it's $23, $24 million. The one thing is he is a center. He is not a shooting guard or, you know, a small forward. He is a down low post center. So he's going to be lumped in with the Andre Drummonds and the Hassan Whitesides of this class and everything. And I don't see a team committing to him for 4 years at, you know, $80 million.
Let me ask you this, Bobby. One thing I heard from general managers was they weren't sure if bringing Dwight Howard in was going to be a plus for them recruiting free agents in the offseason. In other words, you've got Dwight on your team. Is he a centerpiece player that guys want to play with? Do you think Dwight is a player guys want to play with?
Well, I think that day and age has passed. You know, if he was still in Orlando, then yes, then he is that franchise-type player. But he's a second option right now, second, third option on a team. And the stigma of what happened in Orlando and how he left Los Angeles is going to carry him forever. And it doesn't matter if he is the poster boy for being on good behavior. It's just something he's not going to shake.
All right, guys, let's see now what's buzzing on social media around the trade deadline. Here is our first tweet. Addressed to you, Woj, did Toronto come close to doing anything today?
No, Toronto, listen, Masai Ujiri was very active on the phones in the last few days, but in conversations with him in the front office in Toronto, they were very cautious about how any move would affect their chemistry. And I know some people had connected them to Markieff Morris. They were never involved in that. That they feel like they've got a group that, listen, they're second in the East right now. They're three behind Cleveland, and they weren't going to take that big risk of a move that might not only not move them up, but drop them down. They stood pat, and again, they've got a unique chemistry with that group, and I just think they were very careful about who fits there.
Bobby, that's a very good team in Toronto. Two of the best guards in the NBA, at least in the Eastern Conference, and Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan. Hopefully they get Damari Carroll back to give them something in the postseason. Did they need to make a trade at the deadline?
Well, did they is one word. Adding a player to the locker room can disrupt a team right now, and they're rolling. You know, they're the second best team in the East, and even if you add a talent, remember, it's only 25, 30 games right now. They're on the par with Cleveland right now. Can they beat Cleveland in a seven-game series? We don't know. We don't even know if they can get out of the first round.
You're putting them on par with Cleveland.
I am. I love their bench. I really do. I think their bench is their strength. When they get Damari back, you can have Biombo and Corey Joseph. You can have Terrence Ross come off the bench. I can put them in a finals with Cleveland. But as I said, as the last 2 years have shown, they haven't even been able to get out of the first round.
All right, you're buying big on Toronto. Hate Dwight, but buying big on Toronto. Okay. All right, tweet number two. Woj, how close were the Knicks to making a move today?
Chris, the Knicks just don't have assets to make it.
You're putting it nicely there. They don't have anything to make it.
It gets back to that. And listen, they tried to be involved with Jeff Teague. They didn't have, if Atlanta was going to trade Teague, they wanted a really super talented young player. They wanted draft picks. The Knicks have given up draft picks. I think they're very cautious now in New York. They've seen the impact Kristaps Porzingis has had on them. It's been forever in New York since a young player has made that kind of impact. Maybe since Channing Frye was one of the last rookies that really made an impact for them. And so they in New York just didn't have the ability. They made calls. They were on the phone. But you talk to teams, and they just tell you the same thing. New York doesn't have anything we want.
The Knicks are like the ultimate trade machine team. Like, we'll give you Jose Calderon and Aaron Aflalo, and you send back Kevin Durant on that particular deal. It's done. Knicks fans love it. Scal, what do you think of the fact the Knicks couldn't get anything done today? They're a team looking to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. How bad was it that they couldn't make a deal?
Well, I heard the rumor, the Kevin Love for Carmelo Anthony, and that was the one trade that I actually thought made sense for both teams. I mean, Kevin Love going to New York, I think, would be a good fit. They can replace him with going now getting a Channing Frye instead. And Carmelo has that no trade clause, so I thought the only team that Carmelo would sign off for that could actually do something is to go play with his banana boat buddy, LeBron James, where they go hang around in the Bahamas. So I really thought that trade was going to go through. It didn't go through, but I was a little bit shocked. But I agree with Woj. What other assets do they have? The one thing they have to make a decision on, Melo is 31. Porzingis is 20, or I guess he's 20. They're not going to hit their prime at the same time. I think it's time to move on from Melo, if you can, because he has a no-trade clause in his contract. But, I thought that was the one trade that would have made sense.
Scalabrine hates Melo. Scalabrine hates Dwight Howard.
No, I like Melo.
Hates everybody over the age of 30.
Like Melo.
Ageist.
I like Melo.
Bobby, you've been dealt with teams before as an assistant GM. Knicks not making a trade. Is it just a fact, matter of they don't have the assets?
Well, they could have if they wanted to move a 2018 first-round pick, if they wanted to go that route. But I give them credit for showing restraint. Sometimes you got to be realistic on where you are, especially the teams in front of you that got better over the last couple days. They're not making the playoffs. I mean, it's a simple fact. And to kind of sit on your hands during the trade deadline, I'm sure they explored making a move, was the right thing to do.
Watch quickly. Was Carmelo Anthony actually out there?
He was not. Carmelo Anthony has made it clear to the Knicks he is not waiving his no trade clause. And a player of that stature typically might look at it in the summertime, but you don't see players waiving their no trade with very little time to decide midseason at trade deadline. I don't think Carmelo Anthony has an appetite to leave New York. He re-signed there for a reason. He loves living in the city, and he's gotten certainly some hope here with Porzingis, but I think Anthony will be with the Knicks for the foreseeable future.
Well, the one guy who did make out today is Carmelo Anthony, as you said. Now, you have to remember, he has a trade bonus in his contract that if he is traded July, worth $9 million. So if New York does decide to trade him and he does waive his no trade, he will be handed over a check for $9 million on top of his salary. So he actually made out today.
Good to be Carmelo Anthony. All right, tweet number three. Woj, does adding Markieff Morris make the Wizards a playoff team?
Listen, in the East, they have an opportunity to still make a jump back up. I think it's going to be difficult for this Wizards team. They've got to keep Bradley Beal healthy. That's the key for them, is keeping him on the floor. John Wall's played very well this season, but this is a group that, again, had tremendous expectations coming in to the season, swept Toronto last year in the first round and got to a conference semifinal. Let's see what Markieff Morris is now. He has talked about wanting out since they traded his brother Marcus last summer in Phoenix. Listen, at some point, Markieff Morris has to understand that this isn't travel basketball where you get to play with your brother all the time, that it is not possible for him and Marcus to play on the same team. He's got to get over that and start being a professional.
Yeah, I maybe I'm just an optimist, unlike Brian Scalabrine, but maybe I'm just an optimist. I think that Markieff, separated from that dysfunctional Phoenix Suns situation, is going to be a pretty good player. May not be an all-star, but he might get back to the levels of production he had before this whole roller coaster of a year started to unravel for him. Scal, I want to throw it to you. The Wizards, even before this Markieff Morris trade, among the more disappointing teams in the NBA. When you watch Washington play, why have they not lived up to the expectations we had for them coming into the season?
Well, they didn't have an identity early in the season. They were trying to play this run-and-gun style, which led to them taking just a bunch of pull-up jump shots from 15 feet, not getting to the basket. Once they figured out their identity, they're going to play small. So now they get rid of Humphries, get rid of Blair, bring in Morris. But you know what? Who's right in all this is Woj is right. What's going to happen is Bradley Beal is going to remain healthy. Morris is going to play good, and Morris is going to get all the credit. Mannix, you'll be sitting down with him, doing your podcast, and saying how great it is that he turned everything around. But at the end of the day, it's Bradley Beal being healthy and Morris getting all the credit.
Bobby, what do you think of Markieff Morris's fit in Washington?
Well, there's already a body of evidence in Detroit with his brother Marcus. You know, he's having his best year on the court. He's been a model citizen, you know, off the court. The benefit is that there's we've got 30 games left. I call it the honeymoon period. So he is going to be on his best behavior the next couple months. We'll see what happens next year. But for that contract and for the stretch run, I love the move.
Well, they're already printing Kevin Durant's jerseys in Washington, fans showing up. Is Washington a realistic option for Kevin Durant?
By every account that I've been told and sources around, Washington is not, they do not have a real chance to get him. The idea that Kevin Durant wants to go home and play again in D.C. and live there, he's never spent a lot of time there since he grew up, went to the University of Texas, and then obviously drafted in the NBA in Seattle and then into Oklahoma City. It is not an advantage to be the hometown team for him. If Kevin Durant leaves Oklahoma City, he wants to go to a team that is ready to win a championship from day one, and that's a very small group. That's why Golden State has a tremendous opportunity to get Durant if he decides to leave OKC.
Yeah, these guys spend a lot of time whittling down their inner circle. The last thing they want to do oftentimes is expanding that inner circle, and that's exactly what happened to Kevin Durant if he went back to D.C. Of course, we all have to see what happens with Oklahoma City this year. They win a championship, going to be hard to drag Kevin Durant away. All right, we're going to step away again, but when we come back, what will the fantasy impact as San Antonio considers shutting down their stars? Yahoo Fantasy expert Andy Behrens breaks it down when we come back. Welcome back to the NBA Trade Deadline Special on The Vertical and Yahoo Sports. For the next 60 minutes, we'll continue to go around the league and hear from the top GMs, coaches, and players about how and why certain trades went down. Once again, I'm joined by The Vertical's team of Bobby Marks, Adrian Wojnarowski, and the perpetual ageist, Brian Scalabrine. Guys,
you in the shot every time. You guys throw a shot my way.
Here's a look at some of the trades we reported on The Vertical website today. Markieff Morris very recently traded to the Washington Wizards. Chris Humphries, DeJuan Blair, first-round draft pick that goes to the Phoenix Suns. Channing Frye, the big name in a three-team deal. He goes to the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs get their stretch forward for the stretch run. Anderson Varejão, he shipped out of Cleveland after a number of years with the Cavs. He'll be waived, a first-round pick going to the Portland Trailblazers in that deal. And the Denver Nuggets, they get DJ Augustine, Steve Novak, and 2 second-round picks from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Randy Foy, a sought-after two-guard for somebody's bench, he goes over to Oklahoma City. And Jeff Green, he moves again, going to the LA Clippers, reunited with Doc Rivers. The Grizzlies, they get the off-traveled now Lance Stevenson back in the deal. Joined now on our set, Bobby, Woj, Scal. I want to bring you guys into this conversation. The Chicago Bulls talked about dealing Pau Gasol before the deadline. Didn't happen. Woj, why didn't that trade come to fruition?
Chicago was willing to move Pau Gasol. They offered him to several teams in the league. They couldn't get enough back. Sacramento was very motivated, as sources told both you and I, Chris, to get a Pau Gasol deal done. In a lot of ways, it didn't make sense, given Sacramento's trying hard to get into the playoffs. They've got a lot of ground to cover in to do that in the West. And Pau Gasol is not re-signing with the Kings. And so Pau Gasol, and he made this clear to the Bulls over the last couple days, he's very interested in re-signing there. He's enjoyed his time there. Listen, at 35, 36 years old, he's got one more significant contract left. He'll opt out of his deal this summer. But he was not interested in being a rental. And he made that clear, and that word got out around the league to teams, that if you think you're going to trade for Pau Gasol and get a real spirited player who's going to drive you through the playoffs, the message was buyer beware. And so he stays in Chicago, and now they'll try to figure out his future there. But he's an asset. He's a hard guy to let walk away for nothing with the Bulls.
Let me follow up on that with you, Woj. What direction is Gar Foreman, John Paxson, and that group going in right now? Because they do have several guys that are going to be free agents headlined by Gasol and Joakim Noah. The pieces haven't necessarily fit in with Fred Hoiberg. Injuries have certainly played a role in that. What does this team do going into next offseason with this roster?
Chris, clearly they want to start trying to build the team in the image of Fred Hoiberg away from the group that Tom Thibodeau had. They want shooters. They want to spread the floor. They want athleticism. And listen, they're finding out something in Chicago right now. Tom Thibodeau got a tremendous amount, as much as maybe anybody could, out of the team they had. And they've seen this team, this group fall apart now. The Joakim Noah injury, certainly significant, season ending. But they've got to start building a team now groomed around Hoiberg, which is really, again, spreading the floor, shooting the ball. But they're going through, their days as a contender are over. And what will be interesting now is Jimmy Butler. I'm told Jimmy Butler, they've talked about a timeline of 2 or 3 weeks. Sources tell me Butler's going to be out maybe at least a month still before he's back. And I'm not sure there's any reason now for him to rush back. This team's not a contender anymore.
Bobby, let me ask you about Sacramento. a bullet dodged not making this deal? Because the pieces that were in play, as we all reported over the course of the last 24 hours, seemed like a lot to give up for a player that, as Woj mentioned, was not going to be there in 3 months.
Well, I think the best thing that happened with Sacramento is that they didn't make any trades this deadline. And I say that in because they've got so much stuff going out to Chicago and Philly from recent trades. And the one thing you learn is that at the deadline is you can't chase the picks you don't have anymore. And you can't make up for them. They're already out. You got to forget about them. The other thing is you have to be realistic where you are in the standings, especially out west. You know, the Kings are, you know, 4 or 5 in the loss column, you know, behind two teams who are on a roll, Utah, Portland, and they still have Houston in front of them. And the thinking of them getting into the playoffs by getting a Pau Gasol is looking at it the wrong way. I understand they have a new building that's going to be opened in the fall and everything, but you've got to start building it the right way and to, you know, to move some pieces around and, you know, make Chicago a little bit better is not the right way to go about it.
Scal, you were teammates of both Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose in Chicago. You know, they're now pairing together, not for the first time, but the first extended period of time with both guys being healthy prior to the All-Star break. What do you make of the fit of those two playing together?
Well, you got to remember, when Derrick Rose was hurt, the emergence of Jimmy Butler, he took it off and being one of the best players in the league at his position. Now Derrick Rose, former MVP, is starting to feel and get back to that, not to that level, but he's starting to, you know, not get hurt all the time and could dominate a game. So both these guys are rising up. Jimmy Butler wants to be the leader like he was when Derrick was hurt. Derrick wants to be back to where he was in that MVP season. So I think it's really it's not a great fit for right now for what these guys have. We see it all the time. Ball dominant guards with a nice shooting component to that. And neither one of these guys wants to be off the ball shooting the basketball. They all want the ball in their hands and they want to create. And both of them at different times this season have proven that they can dominate with the ball in their hand. Jimmy Butler, that amazing second half against Toronto. Derrick Rose had some pretty good games. That one game against Oklahoma City stands out in my mind. But I just don't know where they're going. They're struggling now. Jimmy Butler's hurt. You never know what's happening with Derrick Rose. I don't know if the Bulls are just going to blow this thing up, take their young assets, and maybe try to build around. I really have no idea the direction they're going to go. Once they beat Cleveland after T. Lou took over, you thought that they were going to head into a completely different direction. They've really been struggling since then.
Bobby, let's take it back to Pau Gasol, 35 years old, entering unrestricted free agency, a lot of teams with a lot of money available. What kind of contract do you think Pau can expect to receive or be offered when he gets free agency?
Well, with Chicago, if he's going to resign, they're limited as far as what they can pay him. He's got early bird rights if he opts out of his contract. The most they can pay him is $13 million. They can go into some cap space if they can, you know, figure out their books there. I still have him as the best power forward on the market. Will he get more than Ryan Anderson? No, and that's based on age. But he is still a productive player, still at the age of 35. But you're looking at a player on a two to three-year contract, you know, $10 to $12 million. You know, that's where his range is right now.
Coach, clarify this for me quickly. Pau Gasol wants to be in Chicago because there was some mixed message, I think, earlier in the season about whether or not he really wanted to be there long term.
He hasn't fully committed, Chris, saying, I'm going to resign. We always know it's a negotiation, but he's motivated. He likes living in the city. Pau Gasol is a big city guy. He loved being in L.A. And again, being in Chicago has appealed to him. I think for him is, what is this team going to look like? How is he going to fit into it? At his age, he wants to win, certainly, but he and his representatives have made it very clear to the Bulls in the last day or so that they have every opportunity to re-sign him.
I think Pau Gasol and Brook Lopez should have it grandfathered into their contracts that they cannot be in trade rumors for at least one and a half consecutive seasons. All right. The San Antonio Spurs, they appear to be locked in for a 2 seed in the Western Conference right behind Golden State. Here's Andy Behrens on what that might mean for fantasy owners.
The most significant shutdown candidate facing fantasy owners as we come upon the biggest weeks of the fantasy season has to be the San Antonio Spurs and what they do in the closing weeks. Something I'm terrified of as a Kawhi Leonard owner is a possible shutdown by the San Antonio Spurs. in the most critical weeks of your fantasy season, right? The San Antonio Spurs right now pretty well locked into the number two seed in the West. They're chasing a team in Golden State that's only lost four times. They are four games back of them in the loss column, and Golden State may not lose another four games. So I don't think they're going to catch them. And then Oklahoma City behind them faces the toughest second half schedule in the NBA. So very difficult situation for the Thunder in terms of catching the Spurs. I think the Spurs probably shut it down in the final 3 weeks or so. I think you're going to see a lot more of the Spurs junior varsity than the varsity. It's going to be good times for Boban and company, not so good for Kawhi, for Tim Duncan, for Aldridge and Parker.
All right, Woj, let's see what's buzzing on the social media around the trade deadline. Here's our first tweet. This goes to all of us, I guess. Who is the biggest loser, guys, at the trade deadline? Woj, we'll start with you.
Chris, New Orleans. With Ryan Anderson, who's going to be an unrestricted free agent this summer, you know, they have one of the great stretch fours in the league, and they tried very hard to find a deal to get something in return for him. It is very unlikely, my sources tell me, that Ryan Anderson is going to re-sign and stay with the Pelicans. And if they lose Ryan Anderson for nothing this summer, that would be, I think, devastating because they don't have a lot of assets there. Teams around the league were afraid of how much Anderson can command on the market, and that if they traded for him, they may have to pay him between $16 and $18 million a year to sign him. One example, the Detroit Pistons. Sources told me they looked very hard at a three-way deal with Orlando, New Orleans, and Detroit, where they would have gotten Ryan Anderson, and Tobias Harris would have went to New Orleans. But league sources tell me that ultimately they decided that they had cost certainty with Tobias Harris. They have him under contract for 3 years, and that Detroit wasn't going to risk trading for Ryan Anderson and either losing him outright in free agency or having to come close to maxing him out. And so they went with the safer Harris deal.
Scal, tell me if I'm crazy here, but I look at the Celtics as being kind of a loser at the trade deadline. It's hard to say that
about a team
that's as hot as Boston is, has the chemistry that Boston has, but I still go back to Al Horford. I think if there was a player on the market, including Kevin Love, I think Al Horford would have been the best fit for the Celtics, a bona fide low post presence. You could pay him because either pay him or pay Jared Sullinger, Tyler Zeller, and Kelly Olynyk eventually. I'd take Al Horford at this point of his career over those guys in conjunction. Boston, how do you think they came out at the deadline?
I mean, if the Celtics don't make a trade, they still own Brooklyn's next three picks. They're doing fine right now. Now, Chris, I 100% agree with you. Al Horford is the perfect fit for the Celtics. There's no way he doesn't work out. And there's no way he doesn't re-sign with the team if they get him. But once again, you're going to get, even if you don't get Al Horford, you got a top three pick making peanuts in these rookie contracts compared to 20-something million dollars. You still have cap space. At the end of the day, you might be able to do the draft pick and sign Al Horford as a free agent. So it's not a total loss. They're not the biggest loser. It's Houston because they still have Dwight Howard.
Bobby, who's the GM right now feeling the most disappointed?
Well, the team that should be the most disappointed is Memphis. And I understand getting a first-round pick for Jeff Green, but I look at their situation. I think it sends a terrible, terrible message to that fan base there. They're in the 5 seed right now. You give Courtney Lee away a couple days ago for nothing. I understand second-round picks, but second-round picks are like fake currency. You never know when you're going to get them and what it's going to be. And with the Jeff Green trade for Lance Stephenson today, I just look at where their assets are going. I mean, there's a likelihood that pick's going to go to Denver this year, and they might fall out of this playoff race and everything. And they got a first-round back, and they got to replenish a little bit, but I am not digging what Memphis did the last couple days.
Can we just acknowledge quickly that now Lance Stephenson and Tony Allen are on the same team?
That's awesome.
How awesome
is that? What do you mean?
I'm saying
we all want to watch what that's going to be like.
I think it's going to be hilarious. Woj, quickly, what does this mean for Mike Conley? It seems like this Memphis team is now, I don't want to say rebuilding because you have Marc Gasol and you have Zach Randolph, but what does this mean for Mike Conley, a free agent to be this summer?
The best thing Memphis has going, Chris Ford, in re-signing Mike Conley is his loyalty to Marc Gasol. And part of Marc Gasol re-signing and signing the 5-year max deal last summer was he felt that Mike Conley was going to stay. Those two have a tremendous allegiance to each other. But if Mike Conley is being honest and looking at this group right now, this is no longer a championship contender. Obviously, Gasol's out for the year. And it will be interesting to see how this impacts Conley's free agency this summer?
Bobby, Mike Conley, max player?
He's going to get it. You have to look at what's out there on the open market this summer. He's the best free agent. You've got him. You've got Rondo. Jordan Clarkson's restricted. There's about seven teams that need a point guard. And Mike Conley, even with some flaws, he's going to get his $25 million.
All right, let's check out the next tweet. Addressed to all of us as well. Was the Jeff Green trade a steal for the Los Angeles Clippers? Scal, you're familiar with Jeff Green. Do you see this as a steal, swapping Jeff Green for Lance Stephenson?
I mean, getting rid of Lance Stephenson on the Clippers is probably a steal. I think no one was interested in Lance Stephenson. So Jeff Green could perform. Like I said, Doc is already familiar with what Jeff can do. He didn't want to have Lance Stephenson, didn't fit into what their plans are. So you get rid of one contract and you take another one. And even at the end, Jeff Green is a free agent this summer. And so you can, I guess you have a chance to re-sign him, maybe get him for a deal.
Well, is just Jeff Green the type of player that can give the Clippers something going to the postseason?
Memphis made a pretty significant gamble last year in trading a first-round pick to Boston for Jeff Green. It did not pay off. And now the Clippers are really making that gamble themselves. They have given up a lot of future assets in Los Angeles. Doc Rivers has since he's taken over. They're the ultimate win-now team. Jeff Green wasn't able to do that in Memphis. Now the Clippers are certainly, listen, there's less on Jeff Green with this Clippers team and the talent around him than was on him in Memphis, but they are all in with the Clippers now, and they do not have young assets. They don't have good young players. They better win now, because they're going to have trouble going forward, because they have not been able to replenish their bench through the draft. And, you know, again, they trade another first-round pick out.
Bobby?
But you have to remember, the two picks that are going out, the one to Toronto in 2017 and the one to Memphis possibly in 2019, although they're lottery protected, those are the years when Blake Griffin and Chris Paul could be free agents. So how are you going to replenish your assets if both those players walk? Where if they don't win a championship, what is the reason to stay in Los Angeles? I mean, your window is closing, and with those two monsters up front with Golden State and San Antonio, I don't see the Clippers getting out of the second round.
Yeah, I think Jeff Green can help them. He's got talent. Maybe you can play him in a small lineup alongside a Blake Griffin or even a DeAndre Jordan. But if you're expecting consistency for Jeff Green, you're expecting something he has never given at any point in time during his career. All right, we're going to take one more time out, but still to come, plenty of deals today, but why we could see some guys moving teams on March 1st. Bobby Marks will explain. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the NBA Trade Deadline Show here on the Vertical at Yahoo Sports. Chris Mannix, Brian Scalabrine, Bobby Marks, and Adrian Wojnarowski joining us. Bobby, a lot of these trades that are made are financially motivated. Which team had the best financial day today?
Well, besides on the court, you have to look at teams like Miami. The Heat were able to get under the repeater tax, although there is a chance they could go over it based on what their roster is. They do have two open roster spots. Oklahoma City, by making that trade, saved about $8 million in luxury tax. Portland, which is interesting, was a team that was below the salary cap floor that needed to get to $63 million and reached that today. And they saved about $9 million by doing so. So a lot of money that was saved today, as well as, you know, some teams adding some quality players.
Woj, we talk about the Cavaliers and how willing they are to spend money to appease LeBron James and to help them win a championship. But this deal for Channing Frye, that wouldn't have gotten done, right, unless Anderson Varejao was moved to Portland?
That's right, and they had the trade exception to take Channing Frye in, but what it would have done to their luxury tax was essentially go and you know, Bobby was the one who added it all up for me, of course. I think it would have went from $60 million to $90 million if they had kept Varejao, and even Dan Gilbert is going to swallow hard at that one, but they were able to get the Varejao contract off, and now Channing Frye comes in there, and listen, this is a player that can help them really help them deep into the playoffs.
Well, the Houston Rockets, they made a couple of minor moves today. They moved Donatas Montiunas in a trade. They did not deal Dwight Howard. Joining us now on the phone lines, the Houston Rockets GM, Daryl Morey. Daryl, thanks for joining us. How comfortable are you with the moves you did and didn't make today?
Comfortable. I mean, you generally don't get a lot of options. You know, we're always focused on, you know, upping our ability to win the championship. Sometimes those moves don't seem apparent on the surface, but we think this move sets us up well, and free agency with the gusher of cap money coming in, our ability to use that first. If we pick a player, it'll be someone who's got a great upside to play for us and we'll leave our other money untouched, or we can use that first in trade and take a player in using that first of significance that could help set ourselves up. This year, we still feel very good about our roster. We're not feeling good about how we're playing, but we feel good about our roster. It's the group that made the Western Conference Finals. Last year, obviously we did not have Donatus for that run. So we still feel good about this group. We were able to keep ourselves in the hunt this year if we can start playing together and also set up much better free agency and our ability to win down the road.
There are a lot of speculation in the days leading up to the trade deadline that you guys were looking to trade Dwight Howard. You do not trade Dwight Howard. What's your position on Dwight at this point?
Yeah, we're thrilled. I mean, James and Dwight together have made the Western Conference Finals, have won more than 2/3 of their games. I mean, this is a group that we would be very reluctant to split up. Obviously, there was a lot of interest in him. I think there was a lot of noise about that, but yeah, that was something we were going to be very reluctant to break up. As part of my job, I do have to listen to everything, but nothing got close, and we weren't going to split that up unless it was something significant.
Daryl, Adrian Wojnarowski here. The future with Dwight Howard, obviously he's very likely going to opt out of his deal this summer and become an unrestricted free agent. Do you see him long-term with your group? And is there anything here between now and the end of the season that James Harden and Dwight need to get on the same page about to be able to go forward together?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it'll be up to Dwight, where he wants to go. Again, we feel we like James and Dwight together. That's been a very successful pairing. Not successful as we want in terms of ending in the title, but in terms of the games we've won and how deep we've been able to make it in the playoffs and how effective we've been with them together. In terms of them getting together, they play very well together. I mean, again, winning more than 2/3 of their games, making the Western Conference Finals. Right now, obviously, we're in a down period, but we've got time to turn it around, and our focus is going to be to do that.
Daryl, last season you were a top 10 teams defensively. This year you've slipped kind of the bottom third of the NBA. I think you hope to turn that around when you replace Kevin McHale with J.B. Bickerstaff. It hasn't quite happened to this point. What have you seen from your team defensively that they're just not able to get on the same page they were last year?
Yeah, it's up and down the roster. I mean, it starts with our transition D has not been as effective as last year with the league. Obviously, going more towards playing on offense, closer to how we play, closer to how Golden State plays, up-tempo, space the floor. The transition D is where it all starts. That has been not as strong as we need it to be. That's something the coaches are working on. Our pick-and-roll D hasn't been as strong as well. That's something we continue to work on. We deal in reality here in Houston, and the reality is our defense has not been anywhere near it needs to be to win at a high level, and our challenge down the stretch will be to turn that around. We know this group can do it, but we've got to get it done.
Is there something you see, Daryl, because, I mean, last year I think one of the big reasons you made that great run to the conference finals, gave Golden State all they could ask for in those first couple of games of that conference finals, is that everyone was on that same page defensively. Is there something specific you see missing from this year's team that was there last year?
Well, again, it's pretty much the same group. I would say from, just the start of the season, we just have not played well. I wish if I could point at an exact thing or issue that we would have fixed it already. I would say it's been very frustrating on that end. It's been very disappointing, starting with me. And there are many things I could have done better to fix that problem as well. Right now, it's a group issue and a group thing we have to work through. If we don't turn it around, we're obviously could miss the playoffs and won't win a round at all. I mean, you can't advance in the Western Conference unless you have at least the defense above average, and we're not there right now.
Daryl, last thing, this summer in free agency, you've maintained your flexibility with the cap. Do you continue to see the Rockets is a major player and a major big market attraction in free agency?
Yeah, I mean, we feel very comfortable. I think we've proven it that we're a top, five destination in the league. And obviously the great players that and roster that you can join, plus all the other advantages of of Houston and top city in the country, no income tax, all those kinds of things. So we feel like we're a top five destination. We'll have the ability to offer two max deals, and obviously there's going to be a lot of people in that party, but we feel like with our city, our roster, and our ability to, and our winning tradition, our ability to offer two max deals, we feel like we're going to be right there with everyone else competing for the top players.
Well, Darryl, I know it's a very busy day. Really appreciate you joining us. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me on. Thank you.
It's Darryl Morey. Now, today may have been a big day for moves, but come March 1st, we could see a lot of action as well. Bobby Marks, explain that for us.
Well, March 1st signals the day players can be bought out of their contract and still be eligible for the playoffs. And we're looking at possibly, you know, 5 to 6 players that are going to be on the open market. Look at David Lee up in Boston, a team that did not make a trade. Lee is still owed $5 million. The hard part with players getting bought out are twofold. One, players do not like to leave money on the table. And two, you better have a team in your back pocket if you're going to sign with him. So look for Lee to be a potential buyout candidate, you know, come the next week. Another player unlikely to be bought out is Brooklyn's Joe Johnson. Johnson, in his final year, has signaled that he would love to stay in Brooklyn and would like to stay there in the near future. A player who was traded today, DJ Augustin. How does he fit in with what Denver is trying to do, as well as Steve Novak, two veterans, and also J.J. Hickson, who was on the Nuggets. You know, a rebounder could help a team down the stretch, you know, during the playoffs.
All right, guys, that's the end of the trade deadline, mercifully, coming to an hour and a half later after it officially ended. Scal, your biggest takeaway from this trade deadline, what are you going to be thinking about?
No moves happen because of cap space increasing next year. No one wants to hinder themselves. And once again, the landscape of the NBA is changing. Contracts are looking more friendly for owners than they are for players. People aren't sitting on $25 million wondering how it's going to move. So a lot less blockbusters. Kind of what I expected.
Well, let me ask you this. Which team out there, or multiple teams, do you think are going to be the most aggressive in going after these buyout players?
Well, listen, it's back to the same group of contenders. And Oklahoma City, the Clippers, San Antonio would like to get involved. David Lee's an interesting one because David Lee's sources tell me is not out looking to go to a championship contender. Lee wants to go to a place where he's going to get minutes in play because he needs to get another contract in this league. He did that in Golden State last year. At the end of their benches, they were winning a championship. So different players are going to have different motivations out there. This is not a real robust buyout market. I don't think there are a lot of significant difference makers out there that are going to close the gap with the elite team, that are going to help a team close the gap with the elite teams.
Scott, let me ask you this. You're around Boston. David Lee is out of Brad Stevens' rotation. Does he have anything left?
Oh, yeah. David can play. It's just that he can't shoot, and Brad wants to play his bigs mostly at the top of the perimeter. So David Lee's more of a driver, decision maker. I'm telling you, I have a feeling he's going to end up in the Clippers. I think Doc Rivers can find a place for him. I think they're looking to go small. They got Jeff Green now. So if you can get David Lee for a minimum deal, and if Boston says, fine, we'll pay you to let you walk, you know, as a favor for David Lee, I can see him going to L.A.
Bobby, any big surprises for you at the trade deadline?
Well, I think the big surprise is that we didn't see any of the big names get moved with Al Horford or Dwight Howard. But it just reiterates the less appeal of some of these expiring contracts. And, you know, a lot of teams have their eye towards July.
I'm just glad the Sacramento Kings didn't make a trade. I mean, I'm just thrilled for it. I mean, the push to make the postseason for the right to get absolutely annihilated by Golden State in 4 games, Woj, that made no sense to me.
Yeah, they've made a lot of moves in Sacramento that are very short-sighted, and they need to start taking a longer view with that organization.
Definitely. I guess we all agree on that one, even Scal. All right, that's all the time we have. Continue to check back with The Vertical and Yahoo Sports for all the latest breaking news and stories from around the league. For the entire Vertical team, I'm Chris Mannix. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to The Vertical special trade deadline show here on The Vertical Podcast Network. Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to the podcast. And don't forget that you can tweet to Chris Mannix at Chris Mannix YS. Send him along any questions or comments you have.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice. Find your voice.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.